Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, prisoner advocate and host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. J.D. Rutherford, former prisoner, now author and advocate. J.D. is with us again to discuss how he was affected by the penal system, the treatment, losses, and roadblocks following his release. He will also speak on his book, Dear Mom, Dear Son, Separated by Bars, Not the Heart, which he and his mother, Linda Rutherford, wrote prior to her passing. Welcome once again with J.D. Rutherford, here to speak on more of his life, losses, and accomplishments. J.D., are you on with us?
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you for coming on. So, J.D., what's happened since we last had you on the show?
Well, a lot of things have happened. So I submitted my motion for early termination of probation under the statute that basically gives the courts the decision power to terminate probation after 1 year of probation, or if half of your probation has been done. I've already completed over half of my federal probation, so I have the support of the probation office. I have the support of people in the law enforcement community and a lot of other support from many other people in the community they believe that probation is no longer necessary for me in my case, because if you look at what probation is designed to do, it's basically designed to, in theory, it's designed to assist you and aid in successfully reintegrating you back into society. Now, some people really need to be on probation. Some people need a lot more help than others. But when somebody can take the reins of their own life and pick themselves up by the bootstraps and completely take charge and take the initiative to rebuild their life and continue on that same path for month after month and year after year, then in my opinion, it would be that probation or parole would no longer be necessary. But in a lot of people's minds, probation is viewed as not an instrument to help people reintegrate society, but it's a supplemental sentence. So if you're given 5 years in the feds and you get 3 years of probation, they look at that as that it's a supplemental sentence, that it goes along with it. So in actuality, you're really doing 8 years instead of the five that you pled guilty to. But when somebody, you know, comes out and is able to basically far outperform all expectations set by probation, then really it becomes kind of not so much counterproductive, but it becomes unnecessary, because this person no longer needs the assistance of the probation to, you know, keep themselves on their feet. They don't no longer need the guidance, the support, and all these aspects that comes with it. They usually set the probation according to whatever cases that fall under the amount of time, whether it be 3 years or 5 years, because they figure that it would take about that long for somebody to get on their feet. But if somebody can get on their feet before that, then that's why they've opened the door for early termination. It is an option that they could utilize in order to let somebody off probation if they've demonstrated that they are an upstanding member of the community. Now I pay my taxes. I've worked continuously at the same job for almost 3 years. I've stayed free from police contact. I've stayed drug and alcohol free. I basically have totally reshaped my life into the direction that most people will not do. I mean, a lot of men and women, they get out, they work a job, they go to some support meetings here and there. They have family support and they have community support. Most of them return back to an area that they're familiar with, and they're able to just mosey through probation or parole. But when you have somebody in my case who is basically dropped in a foreign area, a place totally unknown and a mystery to him, where he had no support, no friends, no family contacts whatsoever, no direction, no possible potential employment leads, but just $38 in the shirt on his back, and was able to accomplish all these things. It's pretty remarkable because most people that statistically are not able to accomplish that.
That is awesome. It really is. And as you said, you came a long way in a short time on your own, which is something that doesn't happen often.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in the halfway house, I was in there for about, let's see, I was in there for just a little over four months, and I was able to secure my own apartment, get a phone line put in there for home confinement, and this is something the halfway house says that they have never seen, because most people have their family. Most people don't, the ones that don't have any family at all will transition into a homeless shelter or a sober living or a place like that. But the difference with me is that I went out and secured my own apartment. I signed the lease, came back and showed it to them, and they were amazed. They said they've never seen somebody save up their money like that and find their own apartment on their own with no help from the halfway house, from probation or any kind of contact, friends, family in the community, that he was able to do that. And since that time, I've moved out of that apartment, and I signed a lease on a 3-bedroom house, and I've had my niece move in with me. Just picked up a new car the other day, and it would seem that I'm only going higher and higher in positive growth, and there's been no setbacks in between. So now I have put in my resignation letter at the job that I'm currently at, and I'm going to be starting in another career direction that's going to pretty much secure my future for the remainder of my life, if it works out the way I believe that it's going to work out. And not only that, like I said, I've published 2 books. I started the nonprofit organization, and I'm starting to slowly get in contacts with people in the community that will help me to further achieve those goals as well.
You know what's so good about that? When you actually think about some judges and on even television, some of the judges that are now having their own courtroom on TV, some of them actually served time in prison, and they came out and they did good. It goes to show you that people can, and as you said, expanding beyond what you've already accomplished to be writing those books. I mean, you have books now on the market with Amazon.com and other bookstores. That alone in itself would have been an achievement, but you've gone even beyond that with everything you've been doing. With everything.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
you know,
you
might be proud of yourself, JD, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of us that are very proud of you for your achievements. And it gives us hope that someday there will be more prisoners coming out that will have that same opportunity and that will do as good as you have been doing.
Yeah, I believe so too, because what really needs to happen is people like myself, people that can counter any excuse that the returning citizen, the formerly incarcerated, could possibly have. Well, I don't have any family left to help me out. Well, neither did I. Well, they're going to make me go back to where they pulled me over on the side of the freeway, and I was 3 states away from my home state, and I don't have my home state to go back to. Me neither. Well, they're not going to hire me because I'm a felon. Well, that's not true, because I'm a felon. It really boils down to your initiative and your drive. Now, this company that I'm going to be working for they ran the background check on me, and it came back clean because most of my record is 7 years or older. Now, what I try to basically stress to people is to take any job that you can get when you first start, because that's what I did. I didn't anticipate in a million years that when I got out, I was going to be working as a dishwasher in a hotel. But that's the job that I got, and I did everything in my power to make sure that I was the best dishwasher that place has ever seen. And with that kind of attitude and that motivation and that drive, it doesn't go unnoticed. And at some point in time, people are going to want to start reaching out to you, and they're going to want to start helping you. And when you have credibility with a company for a year, 2 years, or longer, that's why I always, when I talk about setting goals, I always tell people to, whatever employment that you get, make sure you maintain that same job for at least a year, for at least 1 year, because it shows on your resume that you can actually stick out a job for longer than 6 months, 8 months, but you've actually given it a whole year. And it's good on your resume because now everybody that you work with stands as a good character reference as far as your work ethic is concerned. So it's a lot of things that you have to do. The problem that a lot of returning citizens have is that they feel that the world needs to come to them and provide them the answer to overcome their obstacles. They need to go out and go to these people and prove to them that they can overcome these obstacles. There's nothing that stands in your way. I don't care what it is. I don't care what your religious background is, what your nationality is, what your ethnicity is, your sexual preference. Any man or woman who takes the initiative to take control of their own life can accomplish anything they want, anything they set out their mind to, if they just stop seeing themselves as a victim and start seeing themselves as an overcomer, as a person that made mistakes, that may not have even made any mistakes at all, might have been falsely accused, but they let the experience develop strength within their character. And that strength in their character is able to push them further without falling back on the, oh, woe is me, I can't do this and I can't do that, because there is no such thing as can't. There's always going to be somebody out there that's going to give you the opportunity to succeed. You just have to be willing to meet them halfway.
Exactly. There's a lawyer in Pennsylvania. He went from behind bars to dishwashing, and now he's a lawyer in Pennsylvania. Brett Grody, I don't know if you or others know of him, but he became a lawyer, and there's so many others. And for those that can't get jobs when they come out, they can do the same thing you did. Take your experiences, your life experiences, both negative and positive, and put it in writing and publish a book, because it took a tragedy for me, and it would take a tragedy for a lot of people to put their pain, sorrow, and suffering in writing in a manuscript. Have it edited and get it published, because that is a job in itself. That is a way of making income and bettering yourself. You did that plus way beyond other areas that you covered as well. And it goes to show you that it can be done. And I wish there was a possibility for some schools to take this interview that I'm having with you right now to play it back to the kids in school, because young children today, adolescents today, they need to hear something like this, because this is preventative. This would help them to realize that they can succeed before falling, before ending up in prison, before ending up in a jail setting. And this is why this, you know, the school to prison pipeline is so imperative too. Take things like this, situations like this, and let these kids hear it. Let them see where you came from and how you came so quickly to getting yourself in a situation that most people would love to be in. And you did it all through your negative and positive experiences through life.
Exactly. I mean, it's if you really think about it, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on this school to prison pipeline thing, because the problem with a lot of the youth these days is that they have a sense of entitlement. They believe that the world owes them a shake. And that's not how the world works. The world works on a mutual exchange of incentivized work, you know, that somebody, you know, has the incentive to move forward and to be a hard worker, dedicated, loyal, good family person, a positive image or symbol in the community. And really, when a lot of the young think that the world needs to just give it all to them, it's not going to happen. And when it doesn't happen, it's going to come as a shock, and it's going to cause a great deal of confusion. It's going to cause a great deal of depression. And we see it now. We see that adolescent and youth depression is higher than it's ever been. Suicide rates in young people is higher. School shootings has gone way up as a result of online and school bullying. And everybody wants to point the finger in all these different directions, but yet we don't point the finger back at the one thing that exasperates all this, and that's society itself, the indifference that a lot of people have, and the lack of a spine to stand up and call it for what it is. I mean, the position I take on all this stuff is not very popular, and it does come off as quite controversial. It comes off as, to some people, to look at it as mean-spirited or cold-blooded, but it's not. I'm basically, calling BS, if you will, on a philosophy and a thought process that's just not what it is. It's simply indifference, selfishness, and the inability to take dramatic steps forward in order to fix all of this. And it's not only about fixing the prison system, because the prison system is a symptom of a greater problem. The bigger problem is the lack of unity in our own community, our own society. We have all drawn a line in the sand, and we've taken a political side, and there's a lot of finger pointing and accusations and all these things going on all angles, on all sides. And the only thing that does is that shows our young that we can't get our act together as adults. So why should they?
I want to say one thing, and then I'm going to let you do all the talking from here on in. One of the things that I find that has ruined these kids today is we live in a country that's so full of power and pride and greed. And the producers of these movies, the more gross they can make it, the better it is for them in making money. And these kids are going to these movie theaters and watching on television all these gruesome murders. And what they do is they take the cases that are real out there that are so gross, and they put them on television. So they're making movies on the pain, sorrow, and suffering of victims, of offenders who were victims before becoming offenders. They're making movies, the more gross, the more money coming in. These kids today, as far as greed, as far as power, these kids today are seeing all of this. We have corruption. We have corruption all over the world, all over the country, and government as well as outside. And these kids are seeing all this. These kids have no role models. What you're all about, and what other prisoners coming out are all about that are doing something with their lives, those are the ones that the kids are going to look up to, because they see where you fell. Another thing, you mentioned depression. With somebody that's so depressed, it can go one of two ways. It can either go become a suicide, or it can become a homicide. We never know which way they're going to turn. But we do know that it's people who have experienced a lot of this in prison and a lot of this in the jail. We see all of you that are coming out, not all, but many of you that are coming out and doing something positive with your life. You are the role models that these kids are going to be looking up to, not the politicians, not our government, because our government and our politicians are just as corrupt at times. They're not all together. It's always about the American people, yet it's not about the American people at all. It's about them. These kids see it all. These kids see it. I remember encouraging kids to vote for someone for governor right here in Massachusetts years ago, and they said, no, that person's not going to help. I told them that person will help. And sure enough, those kids let me know the truth, because that governor never helped these kids. That's why I say it's so important for these producers of all these movies to realize that these movies do not have to be published. They do not have to be out there only to encourage kids to do wrong. And that's sad. And then encouraging marijuana, making it legal. I can see where it can help in medicinal purposes, but what's happening now is when I drive down the street, I smell marijuana all around me if there's cars at a stoplight. But because a lot of these people that are approving it now are approving it because either their kids or themselves are using it, and rather than get caught themselves, they will make it legal. So what about all these people in prison who are in for marijuana usage or something like that? These kids are confused I am confused.
Well, most of them that are in marijuana today is because it's still considered illegal in the eyes of the feds. Now, take, for example, where I'm at, Oklahoma City. I'm on federal probation. Now, right down the road from where I live is the state parole office. People that are in the state parole office can go out there and get themselves a cannabis card, a medical card to get marijuana, and they could smoke it legally, and the state of Oklahoma can't violate them for it. But I can't. I can't go out and get that card because it's illegal in the eyes of the feds. So it's just like if I wanted to get medical marijuana for whatever reason that I was presenting to the physician, it wouldn't matter because I wouldn't be allowed to smoke it anyways, because the federal law says that marijuana is illegal. It's the state law that has changed. And in the federal system, people are like, why are people still in prison for possession of marijuana or selling marijuana when it's legalized in these states? It's because people don't understand the application of law. Federal law is separate from state law. States are sovereign states, individual states that are at liberty to make their own rules and laws as they see fit. And the feds cannot circumvent that if the voters have spoken. But if you know anything about the federal government, is that the federal government never has initiatives or measures or propositions to present to the voters. The only thing you vote in the feds is senators, congress people, presidents, and that's it. You don't vote in bills, laws. That's what we as a republic, this country, people don't realize, is not a democracy. This country is a representative republic. And that's why we, instead of us going all gathering down at a town hall and saying all in favor say aye, of which what democracy is, we have chosen a designated mouthpiece to go to Washington and speak on our behalf and to address our needs. With that representative republic that we have system, the only way that you can ensure that it's balanced is by having, like I said, the Electoral College. I hear people talking about getting rid of it and having the popular vote, but the reason why that'll never happen is because we live in a republic. We don't live in a democracy. And the republic says that all states are equal. So if you have the popular vote and no Electoral College, then if one state is more populated than the rest of the country, that state will set law and will elect people for years to come. So a lot of these things that happens as far as federal law is concerned, it would mean that the federal government itself, the Congress and the Senate, would have to either say marijuana is decriminalized. And once that happens, anybody that's in prison on a marijuana offense, if they were to make it retroactive, would immediately be released. But until that time, they're going to continue to stay in prison.
I think all states should be under federal then. I think because there's so much inconsistency, state by state. And if it was all federal, the prisons would be run the same, the states would be run the same. But rather than have all these inconsistencies in different states and governmental areas, it's just confusing. It's almost like do as I say and not as I do in some places. And they really need to have consistency in this country. Just like in a family situation.
I totally agree. The problem that it is, and that any empire, if the federal government was to seize complete control and power over all the states, that it would cease to function as a representative democratic republic. It would turn itself into an empire at that point. And the minute it becomes an empire, then whatever person is in power or peoples that are in power will dictate what the laws look like. So you might get one whole set of congressmen, senators, and an emperor, because it would no longer be a president, an emperor to run the country. Then they would set all these laws and they would do all these things and everybody could be happy. And then the minute those people are out of power, the next group of people come in, they change the whole thing. So in order to have some kind of consistency, that's why they created the Constitution. That's why they They allowed states to have sovereign individuality in order to prevent any form of tyranny, because the Revolutionary War was basically, according to textbooks, a means of establishing sovereign rights of a nation that was no longer going to be under the control of the British Crown. And with that, they said, we're not going to become like that, because there was a push to make it like that, to have a king and to do all that stuff, but they decided not to. They decided instead to form a republic and to have all each states have an equal voice, and to further have a president that's elected into office and that serves his terms and then leaves. It would be a lot of work to completely tear that whole system down and change it. And I don't anticipate that anything like that would happen anytime soon. But what I would suggest for people to do is I would suggest that people continue to go out and advocate more of a united front of the states itself, because governors from all across the country meet in a forum, I think once a year. People would start pushing their governors to basically create like a state compact, to where they can all agree on an application of law that is consistent across all the states. Then the feds couldn't do nothing to stop it.
Perhaps they need to have three governors per state, one to break any ties, because right now, not all governors are on the same path, and when it comes to the decisions of what's right and what's wrong, and who should be released and who should be given another chance, and what's going on in their states. Perhaps they need to have three governors in each state, and if they can't come to an agreement by two, then at least there'll be a tiebreaker. And also getting rid of a lot of these political figures that are not doing anything to begin with. I think we have too many representatives in government, and only a few making really decisions.
Yeah, I believe that the only way moving forward is to quit being so reliant on the federal government, because the federal government has the Constitution and the law itself federally says that states have sovereign rights to basically decide what their future is going to look like. And states have already come together as far as extradition laws, as far as interstate compacts. So, for example, if I was doing time in a California prison, but my family lived in Massachusetts, I could apply for an interstate compact to do a one-for-one exchange. Somebody in Massachusetts wants to do time in California. I want to do time in Massachusetts to be closer to my family. They'll do what's called an interstate compact exchange. And this is something that all the governors of these states have agreed to. Now, not all states are on board with the interstate compact, but most of them are. So that goes to show you that they have the ability to all come together as governors, like if they were the Congress themselves, and to develop an accord, an agreement, to have a compact that applies the application of law consistently across the entire board. And the feds wouldn't be able to do anything about it, because the feds' whole purpose, what people don't understand, is the federal government, its purpose is to pass bills to disperse federal funds. It's not to make laws for various different states. Now, the only time that the feds can intervene in any form of law is when a federal law has been broken. So federal laws would be, of course, people entering the country illegally. That's crossing the border from another nation into ours. That's a federal law.
And JD, we're running out of time now. So if you and I know I got you off track of what we were really talking about, but if you can once again give everyone your name, and we're going to be back on next Sunday at 5:00 p.m. with JD Rutherford again. But JD, you want to quickly give them your information once again?
Yes, Jason JD Rutherford. You can find me on Instagram at author_J. dot D dot Rutherford. You can also find me on Facebook, JD Rutherford, Twitter at JD_Rutherford. You can find my books, Dear Mom, Dear Son, Separated by Bars, Not the Heart, and An Imprisoned Mind on Amazon.com and Kindle Unlimited.
Great. And you can find you on just typing your name on the internet. That's how important you've become. But thank you so much,
yeah.
JD. And I'm so sorry I got you off track again. I have a habit of doing this. And hopefully next week I will not say another word to get you off track. It has been a pleasure once again having you on the show with us. And we look forward to next Sunday at 5 o'clock.
Thank you very
thank
much
you
for
so
having
much.
Me. And I look forward to talking to you again next week. Okay.
And congratulations once again on getting off of probation for good. And you've been doing an excellent job. Thanks again for coming
well,
on.
Well, not yet, but we'll see what the judge says.
I have a feeling it's going to be good.
I hope so. I feel
okay.
too.
Okay. Next week,
okay.
for sure. Next Sunday at 5 o'clock. Thank you so much, JD.
Okay.